Blog Talk Radio.
Desert, where we're speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. Welcome to everyone in the chat room this morning, Patricia, Mary, and all my guests. So glad that you've taken time out of your busy schedule on this Thursday to be with me on the Cross in the Desert. As always, doing my best to speak hope and freedom to Iranians, and today is really a treat for me. A very good friend is going to be my guest in just 28 minutes from now. Her name is Shadi Pave. She is an Iranian-Canadian human rights activist. She's been my guest twice before. Her job is a very painful but fascinating job. She translates the letters of prisoners in Iranian prison and does her best to be their voice and make changes in their situation. And she did that for Rahana Jabari. If it wasn't for Shadi translating the 10 prison letters that Rahana wrote, I could not do this book. Everyone in the world knows more about Rahana Jabari, her suffering, and the things that she endured because of Shadi, my guest today. And you're going to hear from her live in about 25 minutes, and she will explain the very devastation that this death of Rahana had on her and on many of us as human rights activists. And she will talk about her job as a translator. And so you really, really, really want to be here for that interview. Whatever you have to do in the next 20 minutes, please go ahead and do. You want to hear Shadi's story. She's a fascinating, committed, compassionate lady and just one of my dear friends in the whole world. Well, speaking of the Iran situation, yesterday was an event in the nation's capital as many of the prominent 2016 presidential candidates gathered to protest this deal. One of them, of course, is kind of the leader, Ted Cruz, followed by Donald Trump and then Michelle Bachmann, and many, many others were there at the Stop Iran rally. And I listened to as much as I could, and I found one particular speech that I thought summed it up quite well. And I want you to hear from Michelle Bachmann this morning as she talks about why you and I and should tell Congress to stop this deal, to do something about it, and to vote it down. Let's listen to Michelle right now on the cross in the desert.
I'm so proud of you all for being here in this 93-degree heat. Isn't it a blessing to be able to stand here today and speak for literally thousands of people back home? That's what your presence does. You are sending a message across the world that you are going to stand for sanity and not insanity. It is very clear, it is patently obvious, and it is simple what the legislative solution in the short term needs to be. It is accept the victory that has already been given. You see, the federal law states that if Barack Obama failed to give every part of the Iranian agreement to this Congress, and the language actually says including side deals, if he failed to do that by July 19th, well, then the sanctions stand. Case closed. We won. What we need are Republican leaders who will not be complicit with a lawless president, and we need them to go to the microphone today and tell the American people that President Barack Obama failed to deliver in the legislative short term, and therefore the sanctions stand. End of story. Let's move on to the next event. Okay, that is short term. The reason why we are all here today is because of the long term and the present reality. When you have the leading terrorist of the world stating today that within 25 years the Jewish state will no longer exist, as I've said before, when a madman speaks, you listen. 4 years ago, I ran for president of the United States, and I will tell you this. One thing a president needs to do is understand who you negotiate with and who you don't. After decade after decade after decade of broken promises, what you do is reach for the jar of victory. Here's victory. History's already told us what the solution is. Very successfully, when a rogue nation has tried a nuclear program, it was eliminated in Iraq, in Syria. When we eliminated, when the program was eliminated by Israel in Iraq, within several days, Muammar Gaddafi, the head of Libya, called our White House and said, hey, I don't want that to happen to me. Come over and get my nuclear program. I surrender. That's what bad guys do. And so as President of the United States, were I there or would any sane person be President of the United States, this is not tough at all. What you do today, you go in and you take out through kinetic military means the nuclear hardware that exists in Iran today. You take it out. That does not bring about World War III as we have seen in the past. That ensures peace on into the future. You see, by Barack Obama giving $1 trillion over 10 years to the world's leading terrorists, what he is doing is fulfilling the aims and goals of that terrorist, whether for the president realizes or not, he is fulfilling Islamic Jihad. We will not allow that to happen, and I urge you to tell your Congress, your president, and your friends to ensure peace. Today, you start that process of bombing and taking out the nuclear hardware. We're not going to bomb shopping centers. We're not going to bomb innocent people. We're going to take out the means of death and destruction as we should have done in World War II. Take out those death camps. Take out the death camps today and be done with it. That's what a president does. God bless you all. God bless America.
Michelle Bachmann at the Stop Iran rally yesterday at our nation's capital, summing it up quite well. Donald Trump says that if he becomes president before he even takes office, he will have the four Americans home. You know, I believe that. He is a man of truth. He says what he says and he does what he does. I like a man that does not play around with terrorists. And Michelle has said it well. We need to do exactly what we need to do to put our finger right in the face of the supreme leader and says, you will not do anything to Israel. They are our greatest ally. Can you imagine that we have even sat down with the table with these people that claim that they will have nothing more to do with us after this deal? And they keep chanting death to America and that Israel will be destroyed, and we have sat down and funded their terrorist jihad. Well, it's up to the members of Congress to wake up, to get their eyes open, and to see the disaster that is inbuilt in this deal. And you and I need to do our part as well by sounding the alarm, to emailing our senators, our representatives, and tell them that this is a horrendous, disastrous deal. So thank you so much, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, Michelle Bachmann, and others for standing up for our freedom and our rights. Well, speaking of freedom, you know the story of Kim Davis. Thankfully, just a couple of days ago, she was released simply because she's standing on her Christian convictions to not issue licenses, marriage licenses, to same-sex marriage couples. I want you to hear the rally that took place a couple of days ago when Kim Davis was released right now on the cross in the desert.
I want to say thanks to Matt Staver, his representation of Kim, but most of all, thanks to this incredibly brave lady who decided that the courage of her convictions was more important than simply even her own freedom. And she was willing to go to jail for what she believed. She has ignited something across this country where people are tired of the tyranny of judicial action that takes people's freedoms away, takes their basic fundamental constitutional rights and puts them in jeopardy, and a tyranny of a legislative court that believes that it can make up law and somehow find a way to enforce it. I told Kim today that I feel like she's shown more courage than most any politician I know and most every pastor I know, because she's not only said something, she's been willing to put her life at risk in order to follow the Christ that came into her life 4 years ago. And that's a bold declaration of the authenticity of her faith and the reality of it. The fact that so many people have come from all over the country to be here at this rally today for her, they came because they wanted her to be free. What we could not have known when this was planned a week ago was that on the day that everyone comes, they get to watch her walk out of this jail. But we stand with Kim today with gratitude and appreciation, and for her husband Joe, who I appreciate for standing with his wife and in no way doing anything other than being proud that she was willing to pay the price to even go to jail to maintain the clarity of her conscience. And Kim, we are all grateful for you and thank God for you. Delighted to be with you today and standing with you today.
Governor, the judge told her that she cannot interfere with the process of handing out these licenses. What do you advise her to do when she returns to work tomorrow?
That's a legal question for her. But I've already told her that if somebody needs to go to jail, I'm willing to go in her place. And I mean that because I'm tired of watching people being just harassed because they believe something of their faith. And we cannot criminalize the Christian faith or anybody's faith in this country. And I'm praying that there will be remedies that do not involve putting someone in jail for their convictions, especially when the issue is whether the courts can just make a law out of thin air and then somehow try to apply it and punish people for not obeying something that isn't even a law.
Mr. Staver, on Friday...
Yes, for those who say, well, listen, she's an employee, she has to follow the law. Well, but what law? This whole constitutional declaration back in June has no precedent in the Constitution. It was the whims of the Supreme Court justices, and the dissenters agreed you cannot force this upon states that have voted it down. But they went by their whims and by their own hearts and created a law. That's not what the justices are supposed to do, is create law. They're to interpret, not to create. And just so that you want to get a perspective on Kim Davis and the persecution of Kim Davis, because they singled her out. The media, the left wing, singled her out to make an example of her. I want you to hear the words of Rick Santorum on the Greta Van Susteren show, and he had this to say about the situation and the case and the persecution against Kim Davis. Let's listen.
Former Pennsylvania Senator and 2016 GOP presidential candidate supports Kim Davis, says she should not have gone to jail, and commends her for standing up for her beliefs, even calling her heroic. Senator Rick Santorum goes on the record. Good evening, sir.
How you doing, Greta?
So, should she have gone to jail?
No. Again, the mayor of San Francisco violating the law several years ago and issuing marriage certificates, he didn't go to jail. You've had county clerks refusing to issue gun permits, they don't go to jail. So
where do we draw the line? Because, tonight when I drive home and if I speed, should I have to pay a speeding ticket? At what point do we, when's the law the law?
As I've said many times, we need to have accommodations here for people of faith. There are laws in place right now called Religious Freedom Restoration Acts. Do they cover this specific situation? No, they don't. That's why I called for, as soon as this law passed, for the president to issue an executive order that lines up with something called the First Amendment Defense Act, which allows for governmental officials who have conscience issues with this to be able to have some ability to...
So she should step aside and let a deputy do this one. That would work?
There should be some accommodation made for people of faith. This is a very serious religious matter. This is not just something on the verge. It's the equivalent of saying to a doctor, you have to perform an abortion. There's Roe versus Wade, and people have the right under that on that decision to have an abortion. But we don't force doctors to perform abortions. Here we're in a situation, because this is a governmental function, we're going to be forcing people to violate their very deeply held religious beliefs. I mean, this is not just a small matter when it comes to particularly the Christian faith, the Muslim faith, and others. This is a major matter, and it should be accommodated.
Well, you know what's so frustrating about this? I mean, as we look at all the people out there, and people have been very passionate on both sides, this is an easy fix. If she sort of steps aside for those that violate her religious conviction and give it to a deputy, then she doesn't go to jail, she doesn't have to sign it, and then comply with the law, the gay couple can get married. I mean, that's a right? Would you have a problem with that?
To me, there's a short-term issue and a long-term issue. The short-term issue is we need to find accommodation. And so I would agree that we need to pass a law. First Amendment Defense Act is introduced in Congress. I think the president could do it by executive order if he wanted to, because it just applies to federal employees. But we should pass that. Every state should pass a similar piece of legislation to deal with their state employees. And then you can deal with this situation. There's the broader issue, which is more fundamental, and you're a lawyer, you know this, which is if the Supreme Court acts unconstitutionally, what is the recourse for the rest of America? And I believe, and so did Justice Roberts, Justice Scalia, and others, the Supreme Court went beyond its constitutional authority in establishing this right to same-sex marriage. Are we just stuck with it and we have no alternative, or do checks and balances mean something?
I don't know. My thought is, if we're going to have laws, we're going to have laws. And right now, she should have followed the law. That's the first thing. She should follow. And I realize that there should be a sort of escape hatch accommodation we should have, but we don't have that right now. Same thing, you shouldn't have a server in your basement. If you're not supposed to have a server in your basement, don't have the server in the basement. If you can't be here legally in the country, you can't be here legally in the country. It seems like we have a lot of pick and choose with laws right now.
Wait a minute. The Supreme Court just inserted themselves in this and forced themselves on many states, including Kentucky.
So accommodate it.
Well, exactly. But so you can't say, well, it's the same thing as Hillary Clinton. I mean, those laws have been there for a long time.
No, but I'm saying
she knew full well
there,
what she was
there
doing.
Could have been a quick accommodation for this, too.
There could that was. I agree with you. On that, I agree.
We don't have to push it into this. There could have been a quick accommodation. So she
and there
her,
wasn't.
So the
there wasn't by the court. There wasn't by the
right.
governor. The governor could
and
have been
president.
Dealt with this. The president could have dealt with this. No one dealt with this. And that's why. And by the way, I don't see anybody in the federal level. The president's not going to provide any accommodations. This is going to be a serious. This isn't going to be the only time we run into this situation.
I think people like problems. A lot of people like problems. They don't want them fixed because this could be fixed. She could have a religious conviction, and she could, and the law could be followed. And it's like no one wants to make it easy. Anyway, I'm taking the last word on that. His son just got a driver's permit today. Everyone look out.
Yeah, look on Twitter. I put his picture up.
I saw it on Twitter. Thank you, Senator.
Presidential candidate Rick Santorum with some words of wisdom on the case of Kim Davis. She should have every right to object. And as Rick pointed out, they went beyond their constitutional reach, creating this law for 50 states to have to follow. 37 of these states said no. They said yes to traditional marriage and no to same-sex marriage. And this ruling back in June, just a couple of months ago, is overriding the will of the people who said in the beginning, we want only traditional marriage. What has happened to the will of the people? It is being ignored for a cultural mandate by the whim of Supreme Court justices who are not interpreting the Constitution, but they're legislating law. You can't do that. Well, speaking of freedom and speaking of oppression, as we talk about a lot here on the Cross in the Desert, I want to introduce you to Yeonmi Park. She is a North Korean lady that escaped the treachery of the oppression of North Korea. You think about the lives of Iranians and other people. The North Koreans have it so much worse in many ways. And just recently, Yeonmi Park wrote a book called In Order to Live about her brave, courageous escape from the oppression of living under North Korea. I want to introduce you to this amazing lady and how she escaped death. Let's listen to her testimony right now on the cross in the desert.
It still must be very, very hard for you to continually have to recount what you went through in North Korea, but is there one particular memory that is still very vivid for you?
I think it's definitely the execution that I saw, and because it was not that new thing for me, because I saw that many times, but that time was very different. My best friend's mother, and she was a very gentle lady who gave me cookie and who feed me, and she was a very gentle woman, and when she got killed, but that time it was not just her, she was with 7 other people, and there was a 20 years, early teen or late 20, that kind of people were with her, and they got killed. And when they shoot, I saw that the human flesh just come out, and the brain comes out, and that kind of, things cannot be really.
Yeah, you're only, how old were you when you saw this happen?
9 years old.
Only 9 years old. And what happened to you then? What happened to you and your family?
That time my father also, he was a criminal, and I was criminal's daughter. And my mom also interrogated for 2 years, and then she went to prison by breaking a law to move. So North Korea didn't have any freedom of movement, and she went back to her house without permission. And that's why she got arrested and she sent to injure. And
you can see some pictures that we're all looking at now of you in happier times in North Korea with your family.
Mm-hmm.
What was that decision like? Do you remember when your mother decided that you would have to flee, you'd have to leave North Korea and try and find safety in the South?
At that time, actually, we didn't know if we go somewhere there is a place where actually embrace us. And we didn't even know the refugee, that kind of word. And just only what we knew was that if we are staying here, we are going to die for food. And there's no hope.
You were going to starve?
Yes.
Did you see other people starving around you?
I was the one who starved. And I didn't have any moment to look at other people. And I literally had to eat the grass and the dragonflies and frozen potatoes. And even that, if I could eat the frozen potatoes, I would never start that journey. But just we had no choice. But we see only China. Next to us was China. And there's nothing, we can have any other options.
But what happened to you and to your mother, particularly when you arrived in China?
I thought China was going to be better than North Korea, and it was worse. And when I was 13 years old, I saw my mother raped in front of my own eyes. But the rapist was targeted me, and he wanted to have a sex with me. And I didn't even know the words what a sex. And he got, my mom got raped instead, and she sacrificed herself to be raped for me.
Do you know what it is inside you that you have, what strengths it is you have, that means that you've survived all this and you now speak and try and help other women?
I don't think so. It's a very special thing.
I think we think you're very special because your remarkable story and what you're doing now. It must take a lot of courage.
But for me, it's, as a human being, I think I cannot forget them. And I cannot forget have this, and how can I be free here? So all the things that the things all I went through is all the girls just like my age, 11, 13, 15, these girls are being sold for $200. And as a human being, I just cannot really forget them. So I don't think so. This is, I'm a North Korean, that's why I'm doing this. But as a human being, I just have to do this.
A sense of moral obligation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously very, very strong for you. But aren't you now also under threat? Aren't you on a list as well of defectors who is being watched? Is that scary for you?
Oh, I am on target list. And then it feels really, I cannot even explain that, how that feels. The one regime and one terror that North Korea regime against me. And the one country against me, that feels is really scary. And every interview, every place that I go, I just think it can be my last place that I visit, and it can be my last person that I can see. But I think somebody got to pay that price for that, take that freedom, and somebody have to pay that price. So some people who are being forgotten, they can be visible, and they can be seen to us. So I'm really grateful for that. I can be that sacrifice to the people. And through me, people can see the people who are being forgotten and who are dying right at this moment for freedom.
Do you believe that one day the regime will fall in North Korea and that you might be able to go home?
Absolutely. I am very optimistic, and I really believe lie doesn't have power. North Korea regime, they brainwashed me more than decades. They brainwashed my mom more than 40 decades, four decades. But once when we face the truth, it didn't have any power left on us. It just disappeared just suddenly, immediately. And like that, North Korea is just fake regime, and they are just torturing people and terrorize the people there. But I think, I believe in humanity. We are going to help them out from that terror. And I think that's why I'm very optimistic. And I heard the first word a few years ago, I heard that all the human beings are equal, and all the humans have their rights. And I just couldn't believe this world can be this generous.
So when you heard for the first time some of these concepts that we take for granted, that every human being is equal, when you came to the South and started hearing ideas like that, how was that for you when that world was opened up?
Why? When I was in North Korea, I saw the movie Titanic. But that was my actual turning point in my life. It was not because it was a love story. I just couldn't get it why people are making movies for such a shameful story. And how did the actors and the directors would survive? I thought they died. And I just couldn't get it why this is really such a movie. And we are never going to make any movie about the human desires, human natures. Everything is about the regime and dictator. But that's kind of thing that I heard. Why? How can we are all equal? No, Kim Il-sung is special. They have some special power. And what do you mean we are all equal? And it took so long time to me to understand why, and the concept of freedom and human rights. I know the words, but I didn't really get it. What does it mean?
Before we finish today's program, I just have to quickly ask you as well, your mother, your sister, are they with you now in South Korea? Are they okay?
Yeah, in South Korea, yes.
And life there is good for you now?
Oh, they are just started, my sister is learning about the Wi-Fi, car, like that.
How precious is the gift of freedom. How hard we struggle We fight to be free. And there you heard it from Yanmi Park in her latest book, which is going to be out at the end of this month. It's called In Order to Live. And she was asked if one day that she believed she would see this regime fall. And she said, hopefully one day I will be able to go back to North Korea. This is a woman that represents many thousands of other North Koreans that want to be free, that want to walk away from the oppression and the terrorism of living in North Korea. And Yanmi Park is that one such person. So I would recommend that you read her book In Order to Appreciate Your Freedom. It's a book called In Order to Live, Yanmi Park, and her story, her struggle of living under the oppression of North Korea, and how she was able to leave one day and come to the land of the free and the home of the brave. Right now on The Cross in the Desert, I have a very, very special guest I want to introduce to you. Her name is Shadi Pave. She's an Iranian-Canadian human rights activist, and she joins us today on The Cross in the Desert. Well, good morning to you, Shadi, and welcome to The Cross in the Desert.
Good morning, Randy. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Shadi. I was just listening to this report about Yanmi Park, the North Korean defector, and talking about her escape from oppression. And the work that you do, Shadi, you deal a lot with people who are under oppression. You translate the letters of political prisoners in Iran. And this is a very emotional, challenging job. And so what I want to do, Shadi, for the benefit of those that have never heard your story before, I want you to take us back to how this all began, how you began to do this kind of work of being a compassionate voice for those under oppression, for those political prisoners in Iran.
I don't think there was a particular moment of the beginning. It has been something that... since I left Iran as a child being 12 or 13 years old, where you have the benefit of remembering everything pretty well in detail, I decided when I come here and to the West and I'm free, I absolutely need to speak out for everyone over there because they can't, because they are usually arrested, tortured, executed. And I witnessed quite a few executions as a child. They were brazen enough to actually execute people and put their bloodied pictures in the newspapers for everyone to see. They have absolutely no concern if children are going to see it and how they'll be affected. They even have public hangings right now where children are photographed standing right next to the gallows. So, and also my own father was executed as a high-ranking officer when the revolution started. So that is how my journey started, speaking for everyone who really does not have a voice, a lawyer. Their trials are only, I think, 3 to 5 minutes, and about most of the times, 3 to 5 people, maybe more, are tried at once. No evidence. This is not every single time. There are times where criminal trials, they have lawyers and as such, but still it's quite corrupt. So it's hit and miss. You may have a trial that's longer, you may not. So there are people that need to speak for them.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind, Shadi, that the biggest influence on your life was your father and what he stood for, his convictions, his unwavering courage. And you have shared this story before, how at the airport he said goodbye to you, and it was one of the most painful moments of your life.
Yes, it was. I rather really not concentrate on my father too much because there are so many other victims, and he was killed so many years ago, and he's not usually the focus of my work or the focal point. He was a great influence. And so was my uncle. My uncle was also executed. I like to focus on the people who are there now, the people who are basically minors, are being executed for a crime they committed when they were 15 or 16. I want to focus on the women that have absolutely no right to defend themselves if someone tries to rape them or rapes them. Mm-hmm. So those are the people I really, really like to focus on, the ones that are here now in the present that I can do something about.
Well, Shadi, I think the one thing I try to do on the Cross in the Desert is keep people aware of what's happening in Iran. And it's almost been a year since our dear, dear friend Rehana Jabari was executed by this heartless, cruel regime. You were responsible for translating the prison letters that Rehana Jabari wrote while she was in prison. And all of us worked so very hard being her voice, sending petitions out. And there were several times that Rehana's execution was halted, was postponed, and it gave us courage and hope. But last October 25th, this evil, cruel regime hanged an innocent young girl who defended herself against a rape attack from a former government agent. This whole political mess created by this regime really had a devastating effect on you. Please share with us the journey that you had with translating Rehana's letters, what she had to say, and how this affected your life.
Well, first of all, I wasn't the only one who translated the letters. Yes, I translated the vast majority, and I edited the ones that others had translated, mostly because translating Farsi to English, it's a little difficult, Farsi being an ancient language. So I wasn't solely responsible, and I also was not solely responsible for the campaign. There were Shabnam Assadullahi, a great activist, a Canadian-Iranian activist, Nazain Afshinjam, who everyone knows, one of the best activists in Canada, and Mina Ahadi, who is in Germany, does International Committee Against Executions. Full-time, that's what she does. So there was all four of us. It was not by any means myself only. Decided to make a campaign for her. At the beginning, her story was really not outstanding compared to anybody else's. We come across many victims of this regime on a daily basis. What was different about her story is the implication of rape and the implication of you said that he was a government employee. No, he was a intelligence service employee, an ex-employee. They are basically omnipotent. They are not held accountable for anything. So that was quite outstanding. And we weren't even 100% sure about her case because the news had not come out. We were not in touch with her family. But because we stand against executions 100%, 100% of the time, we wanted to defend her. And being a female, she was in much more danger. Because in the courts in Iran, you are not innocent until proven guilty. You are guilty until proven innocent. And you're almost always tortured until you get they get the confession that they want. So we started that for her, and yes, her execution was indeed delayed a few times, in part for the campaign, in part for the petition, and in part due to her mother, who was at the prison site with other protesters, very, very brave people, who stood there at the prison, and they delayed that. The world was watching. What we did, although they did at the end take her life, what we did made Rehana into an absolute symbol, an absolute hero. In that regard, we did win. So that was successful. But translating her letters on me personally was pretty challenging emotionally, simply because usually I get pretty devastating letters, very horrible, even more horrible than the ones she had written, from prisoners. But usually, because the letters are very difficult to take, to smuggle out of prison, and usually they risk their lives for one and each and every letter, we get a letter, one or so, from a particular prisoner here and there, maybe never another one from them. But Rehana's were one of the first times I've seen so many, almost like a novel, come out. So pretty well, myself anyway, I can't speak for others, I was there with her. I got to know the prison, the food, the people, the atmosphere of it. And I recall when I would go to sleep, I would dream of the prison and if I was one of the prisoners. However, that is a that is something that I would gladly bear for her or any other prisoners. I have absolutely no regrets, no complaints. It is challenging. It can be psychologically difficult. but I am more than honored to have done so for her or for anyone else. I would do it again. It is my duty, and it is absolutely something that we should do. But her letters, especially of her torture, were extremely difficult, given that she was only 19 years old.
Yes, she spent the last 7 years of her life enduring just incredible suffering. And one of the things in prison letter number one that really struck me is that she said, perhaps there is someone in this world that will hear my cries and feel my pain. What a personal statement that was. It really spoke to my heart. And in many ways, you have heard her cries and felt her pain by translating these letters.
Yes, again, not just me. Many people heard her cries. Many. It wasn't by any means me. It's just that we, because we're activists and this is our job and this is our duty, we somehow were successful and in making her voice heard. And had it not been for the absolute beautiful campaigning of Miss Mina Ahadi in Germany, who is an expert in campaigning, I would not have been successful. This is her expertise. This is what she does full time. You can actually Google her and find out. She is the best in campaigning. Shabnam Asadullahi is wonderful. Nazain Afshinjam, awesome. We're both very, very active activists, if you would like to put it that way. However, the campaigning was Mina Ahadi's direction, as she is an expert in it. She did Sakina Ashtiani Mohammadi, who was a woman to be stoned. It was one of the biggest campaigns in the world. Mina Ahadi did that, and she was released. It was a long time, but she was released. So I would like to give the credit to the other activists equally, and I would like to realize that it's there. Every one of us has a strength, and it all worked out together. However, very early on, I knew in my heart they may kill her because it wasn't simply a murder case. It was political because of who she had killed and the way they had tortured her. And also, previous to her, there was a couple of other women in similar circumstances that had been killed, Shahla Javed and Dalara Darabi. Dalara was only 17 during this alleged crime. She was hanged at 20 secretly. And Shahla was accused of killing the ex-wife of her lover. Neither were proved, but they were hanged anyway. So the chances were slim, but it was possible. But as activists, we try our best 100% of the time.
Yes, yes. You mentioned Nazanin Afshinjam. She had a similar case to Rahana's a few years ago, where there was a Nazanin who was on
death row
in a rape situation. And she was organized a campaign as well and was very successful in having this young girl exonerated. So I just want to mention, because you mentioned names, Shabnam, and then there was a lady in Germany, just the hard, compassionate work of all of us activists together, and the ones that you mentioned really do make a difference. Now, I wanted to mention something. These prison letters helped you to really know Rahana personally. And at one point, somehow the regime found out about these letters getting out, and they punished Rahana. Tell this amazing story of you being in solidarity with Rahana when she had to sleep in the corridor.
Yes. First of all, before I go through that, yes, you mentioned Nazanin Afshinjam. Yes, she has had a book written about the other Nazanin. Nazanin is a very, very good activist in regards to campaigning, and I believe what she did with saving that girl is somewhat unprecedented, one of the most best success stories. So the respect for Nazanin is unparalleled. And her giving, helping us with that was, we will forever be grateful because we do consider her an expert, basically.
Yeah.
Regarding the letter, yes, I had written for Gatestone Institute. Gatestone helped us quite a bit campaigning for Reihana, and we are very grateful to them for that. Many news agencies refused to do so. But they helped us, and they published whatever we wanted. For that, I would like to thank them, and I would like people to support them because they are always the voice of the voiceless. That letter, I decided to write about the torture so that the world would know, because the regime was constantly saying she confessed. But the confession was taken under while she was being burnt by a curling iron and all
yes.
on her back. And also the fact that they said they were going to take her 15-year-old sister and hang her by the wrist until she dies, as I recall. So I wrote about that. And as far as I know, they found out that this, because I quoted the letter, and this is just my opinion, I don't have any way of being 100% sure, as one cannot be with this mm-hmm. regime, that they found out that they told her that, you have been getting your letters out and giving it to the media, foreign media, as I know from her other cellmates and other sources. And they moved her from Rajai Shah prison, where she was being kept, to a ward that was where very sick people are kept, people with AIDS, with hepatitis, things with contagious things, people with oozing wounds when they have cancer. And she had to sleep in the corridor. There was no room, but at a later date, if I am correct, the prisoners actually, even though they were sick, the other ones moved and gave her the room to sleep in the cell. So that was a punishment. It is not unusual. It's happened with Mr. Bujardi when I've done articles on him. He has been punished in similar situations, being denied medical care, which he is anyway, but worse so. Shahrukh Zamani, also, he was punished. I can go on with the names. Anytime I have done that, it's a 50-50. Sometimes they get very upset, sometimes they don't. This regime is extremely unpredictable. So one cannot predict with any kind of certainty what they're going to react. It all depends who is in charge of the prisoner. Sometimes they're more moderate, sometimes they're more evil. One cannot say.
You really do feel the pain of these prisoners, as you mentioned, and the sleeping in the corridor. And it actually made you, as a human rights activist, take some time to say, look, I feel your pain, Reihana, and you actually slept on the floor because you really felt their suffering and pain. And that's an amazing quality, Shadi, because you don't just write about this. You really feel their hurts and pains. You remember yourself being in Iran, and you appreciate your freedom now living in Canada, and you put your whole heart and soul into each of these cases. I want to take you to the day that devastated all of us, and that is the day that Reihana was hung, and we heard the horrible news that she had lost her fight for life. Take us through the news and how this affected you when you heard this.
Well, I recall that day very clearly. I was getting ready to go to work, and I heard it like everyone else on the news. I was I wasn't shocked, but what I was shocked is that it was done the way it was done, secretly. What we call a secret execution is when the family is not alerted to the place and time. It was secret, just like it was with other prisoners of prominence who we have campaigned for. I only learned of the details later. I did take it hard, as I'm sure everybody else did. It took about 2 to 3 weeks for me to actually be able to wrap my brain around the fact that this beautiful soul was taken. And when I learned about the details of how courageous she was till the end and would not give in to their demands, I realized that she was quite an angelic being and a warrior, better than all of us, really. And I recall when I found out, it really broke my heart when I found out she had the flu or the fever as they were killing her. But then I thought maybe she was too weak to even feel anything. I'm not sure. It's very difficult to go back to that day to see how I felt, how I did. But everybody else, all the other activists, everybody was in mourning for quite some time, and we still are. I can easily say that myself, I think about her very, very often because she was a decorator, and sometimes when I see something beautiful of decorating, I think of her. She was just something that she's one of those prisoners that I think about quite often. She was a special, special soul, as they all are. However, I was very intimately involved with her case for a long period of time. So all of us who were involved, all the other activists as well, I could say easily, I can speak for them, we were very affected to the very deep molecular level of our souls.
Yes, all of us were just so devastated. And at the very end, you mentioned what they tried to do to her. They assembled a videotaping crew, and they said to Rahana, just say that you weren't raped. And they would do everything
That's right.
they could to discredit her story. And Rahana said, I can't. And Rahana stood for the truth. You mentioned she's a beautiful soul. Her name means flower, fragrance, and she lived up to her name so much, Shadi. In fact, one of the quotes I wanted to share with you, I'm sure you're aware of, that Rahana made, I love this quote. She says, in the court of God, I will charge the inspectors and all those that out of ignorance or with their lies wronged me and trampled on my rights and didn't pay heed to the fact that sometimes what appears as reality is really different from it.
Yes, she is. She's quite courageous. And remember, at the end, she's saying such things with the flu, being very sick with a fever. So she was quite a strong person. And this is after 7 years of being imprisoned and tortured and all those things. So she was very much a warrior. And I think she would be pleased today to realize she has been the face and the soul for a movement for all the women who are very perhaps poor, don't have any access to internet, social media. For her, her family was well-to-do relatively, and they had what I call bravery to do what they did, to be on social media and talk about it. Many won't. So she's the voice for all those who can't. Or some way are too afraid. And there's nothing wrong with being afraid. These are people with the soul of the devil inside them. So mm-hmm. one should be afraid of them.
Yeah, you talk about fear. Sholi, her mother, is courageous as well as carrying on these protests outside of the prison Rahana was in. And because of that, they forbade her to come to her own daughter's execution. She couldn't even attend that. And this is how brutal and cruel that they really are.
Well, I'm not 100% sure that's the exact reason. As I said, it's never, we don't know 100% what this regime does. That's just my mm-hmm. personal guess, my expert opinion, why they wouldn't let her there. Many times they haven't let the family be there. They have, I know one woman right now in Canada, Mahvash Alasvandi, very well-known person. They hung two of her sons in 2011. As she was leaving the prison grounds, she wasn't even off the prison grounds, and they didn't let her be there. She was only steps away, perhaps. Who knows? Meters away. So we don't know why they do these things. But my guess with Sholi was because she made a lot of noise, and the regime absolutely hates that. And they figured if she comes with protesters and support and media and et cetera, et cetera. And remember, inside Iran, too, many people supported Rehana. There were a lot of support for her, which is not usual. People believed her. People, I have stories of people telling me that they took a taxi and a taxi driver said to them, if they kill that girl, they got to deal with me. I'm never going to let it go. So you see, they were afraid of any more attention. Her execution was, for all intents and purposes, a secret execution.
Hmm. As I sit here and listen to you and the hard work that you and many other activists, as you've named, do, they sacrifice their time and their lives speaking out for the political prisoners, doing petitions. When you hear of the horror stories, How do you cope with the fact that my government here in the United States will sit down with the terrorist regime and dictate the terms out of a nuclear deal when there is deplorable human rights violations going on in Iran today? I'd like to hear your insight and your reaction to sitting down with this regime and organizing the details of a nuclear deal without addressing the very serious problem of human rights like we're talking about today.
Well, first of all, I am glad to say that there are quite a few senators who are opposed to this. Many people in authority are opposed to it. So that's good news. We're not getting 100% support for this Iran deal. It is very challenging emotionally and psychologically for us that they are ignoring the human rights. And the people that I have spoken to who are for this Iran deal, they say that, well, the nuclear deal is different than the human rights, which is unacceptable because nuclear weapons are only made for destruction of human life.
Uh-huh.
Although Iran is saying they're doing it for peaceful purposes, but I would like to see exactly in detail what those peaceful purposes are. However, no one really knows. None of us know the exact details of the Iran deal except the officials. There are also activists, human rights activists, that are pro this Iran deal, and they believe that when we take this Iran deal, this nuclear deal, off the table and we take focus away from it, then we can deal with the human rights. And they also believe that if we include Iran and put them on the democratic stage and give them diplomatic relations, they may change their behavior with human rights. That is a point also that cannot be discounted. I just personally do not trust this government, and I don't have any hopes for them changing, because nobody is held accountable. When you say, oh, they may change human rights, that would be in a uncorrupt a society and government that works basically without evil intent. Whereas government has no all the judges are basically secular. They can do what they want. In certain villages, mm-hmm. Iran has said, for example, oh, we're not stoning anymore. They're still handing down stoning sentences. There are 13 people right now with sentences of stoning, and although they haven't been stoned yet, but their sentences haven't been reversed. So they have said they have also signed the Geneva Convention. They have that they will not be executing minors, and they are the ones they are. So how do you trust that?
I'm just
a bit baffled by it. I personally do not think they can be trusted. But the officials in the U.S., for example, President Obama, has not lived in that country, has not been under the oppression. So I don't believe he understands fully the devil that he's dealing with. And I think he really believes he's making the best deal. He is stuck between a rock and a hard place. Is no deal better? It's not my area of expertise. All I know is that as a humanitarian and a human rights activist, out of principle alone, I don't even need to know the details of the deal. We cannot deal with people who are the number one sponsor of terrorism, and they torture systematically, and they execute more people in the world per capita. They're number one per capita. And I know this $150 billion of their money that is being released into the deal. Where is it going? Is it going to the people? I don't think so.
No.
So we don't know. I'm against it myself. But I do respect others who are not, because we're free to think what we want.
Yes, that's true. And you're right about that. And you mentioned the unfrozen assets and the sanctions money. Well, it goes to funding terrorism all over the world, in Syria and Yemen, and they the continual tentacles of Iran all over the world, and the money won't go to help the Iran street children, the oppressed people who are hurting. We know where it will go. And so I'm like you, Shadi. I don't trust this government. I'm not a reformist. I believe it needs to be removed.
Yes, reform is for reasonable people. Is for people who can actually who actually can listen. This government cannot listen, and they have only, from their inception, been in power by killing, murder, and blood, and imprisonment. A country who does not even have a court of law and imprisons lawyers, human rights activists, children rights activists, bloggers, a woman who is a British citizen. She got 20 years in prison, although it's been reduced, I do believe, to 6 or 7 years, for one sentence, anti-government sentence, on her Facebook. All she wrote was, "Since I've come back to Iran, the government is too Islamic." The torture they put her through, it's unbearable. I won't even discuss it. I don't want people to lose sleep, and because it's quite nightmarish. But this is what they do. They cannot be trusted because nobody, this is the most important focal point, nobody in Iran is held accountable for anything. Nobody. No officials, nothing. So how can you reform something that there is no system of accountability, there's no system of anything?
Exactly. And you mentioned one of the cases was Royer. There's also a cartoonist named Atna who depicted the Iranian parliament as monkeys because she disagreed with one of their laws, and now she's in prison as well, too.
Yes. It's basically a systematic war against people with social media, against artists, against everyone. Basically, nobody escapes their clutches. Even us, activists here, we are, upon occasion, threatened through social media or what have you. So they're in the 90s, there's something called the Chain Murders of Iran. They assassinated many opposition people groups in some were in Germany. They're very well known for it, and they admit it. They're actually quite proud of it. Many of the murders, not the chain murders, but a lot of the other things, they're pretty proud amongst themselves. They're pretty proud of it that they do this. But whether the $150 billion 100% will go to terrorism, I think that's too much of a generalization. I think the majority will. Where the other ones will go, I think it's going to be stolen by the government officials. That's what I think is going to happen, as opposed to going anywhere else, because they're very well known for taking money for themselves. That's how corrupt they are.
Yes, it's very well known. It's very hard to understand why my administration wants to sit down with them. And I hear what you're saying, that there is a possibility through this for further diplomatic relations. Only time will tell if that's true. Well, Shadi, it's been a delight to hear your expertise on our program here today and how you were so faithful as one of the translators of Rahana's letters to be her voice. You are a compassionate voice to so many hurting political prisoners in Iran. And do you have any just final thoughts for us that you want us to know about Iran, how we can get involved, what we can do and to be a voice for them as well?
My advice would be, not everyone can or has the ability to be an activist like us for many reasons. But what you can do is be vigilant. Petitions are very big. Sign the petitions. Be aware. And just help us in those ways. We do post them often. And even on social media, if there's news that this person has been arrested or so, just pass it on. It's only a click. It doesn't take much effort. And usually the voice of non-Iranians is a lot louder. When the regime sees that that foreigners, to them what they call foreigners, are aware, they do back down. This regime does actually have some shame and does back down. So all I need is from everyone to try to support us in any way they can, and it's very simple. Just sign the petitions, pass it on social media. That's all we ask.
Amen. Shadi, thank you so much for your hard work and your dedication to making life better for these prisoners who are suffering so much, for bringing their case to the world, so that we know about their sufferings and we can do something about it in many ways. And thank you for being a voice for the voiceless. Thank you, Shadi.
Well, thank you for your voice, and thank you for having me on this program, and thank you for working so tirelessly for the Iranian cause. We really appreciate it. So I would like to say thank you to your listeners, and hopefully I'll be on your program again.
You certainly were, Shadi, and you always are welcome to be on the Cross in the Desert. God bless you, dear friend, and have a great day. This is my good friend Shadi Pavey. I thank so much for taking out the time today to be my guest and to enlighten us about the work that she does, translating letters for political prisoners. She has so much knowledge about Iran, and she's so dedicated to seeing a regime change there, to seeing hope and freedom to Iranians, and so she'll always be welcome on my program. Right now, on the Cross in the Desert, we're going to head into a whole different arena. This is called the sound check. To the sound check, where we take a little bit of a diversion from all of the intense subjects today, and we're going to talk today as we spotlight well-known contemporary Christian artists. Today we're going to talk with Natalie Grant. Natalie Grant is a beautiful voice for Christian music. She's also a very dedicated lady in the area of human trafficking. She is a voice for those that are trapped in the sex slave trade. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about Natalie right now and her amazing vocals in a song called I Will Not Be Moved. Let's listen to Natalie Grant right now on the sound check. powerful voice of Natalie Grant, a song, I Will Not Be Moved, right here on The Cross in the Desert. There is a passion in Natalie's life, as well as any of us, to see those that are trapped in the sex slave trade and human trafficking find freedom and hope in Christ, to get delivered from this oppression and this prison of sex, if you will. And that has been the passion of Natalie Grant's life. There is a recently documentary released called In Plain Sight, and this is kind of a preview, a trailer of what that documentary is all about. We're going to listen to it right now on The Cross in the Desert.
It's so family friendly. If you want to really put down some roots, you really can have it all here, I believe. I love it.
Many of us feel the same way about our own city, but would it surprise you to know vulnerable women and children are being targeted by sex traffickers in your area, in plain sight?
Young women and young men that are caught in this are actually victims. You know, they're being manipulated and coerced, and they're slaves.
Do you realize the average age for girls trafficked into prostitution is 12 to 14 years of age?
I think it's 20 years since I was 8 years old. My mother sold me, and I've been doing it ever since.
Do you know this is all happening in the United States?
But all of these are ads for sex. But we found that their minors are being trafficked on here.
And the location of that was right near us.
Are you willing to open your eyes? Are you willing to hear what's really going on? The truth is that women and children are being sold for sex in your city against their will. Join the journey across America as we meet people who are bringing hope in the midst of darkness.
We have to be willing to roll our sleeves up and get our hands dirty and be willing to say no more. We're not being a part of continuing this anymore. Whatever's causing it, let's stop.
The documentary film is called In Plain Sight, right before our eyes. We tend to think that honor killings and things like human trafficking is something over there in the Middle East across the oceans, but it's right here as well. And it's right in the midst of us. That's why it's aptly named In Plain Sight. I know that where I work at Family Christian, we have a passion for this too. We are constantly telling our customers to get in their cell phone, their iPad, their tablet, something called iDisciple. iDisciple is a great resource for the Christian walk. It features traditional devotionals for every day. It has top sermons, Bible translations, the best in Christian music, and you can interact with all of the different authors in our bookstore through iDisciple. You can read their teachings, listen to it, or watch them in audio, video, and text. And when I'm speaking to my customers about, you know, signing up for iDisciple, I always tell them that the money that is for the monthly subscription goes towards helping those trapped in human trafficking, and that Family Christian works with Destiny Rescue that goes out and helps those trapped in the sex slave trade. So part of our subscription fee goes to helping these people, just like what Natalie Grant is talking about in Plain Sight. So I'm glad to see that there is a groundswell of support of people like Natalie Grant and Family Christian trying to make a difference in the lives of those trapped in the sex slave trade. So thankful to people like Natalie Grant, who as a contemporary Christian artist uses her platform to talk about this issue, and more needs to be said about it and more needs to be done about it every single day. Here's another great song, the acoustic version of Your Great Name by Natalie Grant, right now on The Cross in the Desert. Let's listen.
Lost are saved, find their way at the sound of Your great name. All condemned. Feel no shame at the sound of your great name. Every fear has no place at the sound of your great name. The enemy, he has to leave at the sound.
an awesome and beautiful sound, a beautiful voice, Natalie Grant, your great name. And the Bible says that at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow, every tongue will confess that he is Lord to the glory of God the Father. It is the name above all names. That's what Natalie Grant is singing about. Today has been a real treasure and a treat for me, having my good friend Shadi Pave on. She's been on twice before, but I love the work that she does. And such an influence on my life, because it was because of her campaign involved with Nazanin and Shabnam and others. When I first came across the case of Rahana Jabari, it had an effect on me. Much like the video of Netta Sultan being shot in the alleyways during the presidential election of 2009, had such an impact on me. That's why I'm doing today what I'm doing, is because of that video. And because of Rahana Jabari's case, and because of Shadi and Shabnam and Nazanin's influence in my life as very strong, wonderful human rights activists, it's had such an impact on my life that I dedicated my latest book, The Cross in the Desert, to Rahana. And it was my prayer at that time. I remember when I heard this case and followed it, I said, I want to write about her. I want to do something very special for her. And the Lord has answered this prayer in amazing ways. And it will be a book. It's the book of my dreams, to put a face on all suffering women in Iran who have gone through many times over the things that Rahana has endured. And Rahana truly is that symbol, that beautiful fragrance for all of the women suffering in Iran that have had to go through what that she has went through. And maybe we don't know their cases. We need to know their cases, just like Rahana. But I wanted to read to you the dedication in my book, The Cross in the Desert, to Rahana, just as I'm reflecting on my interview with Shadi this morning. And this is what I wrote in The Cross in the Desert. This book is dedicated to the beautiful soul of Rahana Jabari, a 26-year-old suffering martyr who was unjustly executed on October 25th, 2014 in Tehran for the crime of self-defense. Rahana was the victim of an unjust and cruel government who punishes and executes women for defending themselves against rape attacks. For over 7 years in prison, Rahana endured torture and endless hours of interrogations at the hands of barbaric men. Yet during those terrible years of pain, humiliation, and suffering, Rahana wrote more than 10 prison letters defending herself. In the first letter, Rahana writes, quote, "Perhaps someone in this world will hear my cries and feel my pain," unquote. "I have heard your cries, dear Rahana, and I have felt the burden of your intense pain. I will never forget your suffering, and I will tell the world the truth about your unjust and cruel execution." Just 10 days before her 27th birthday, Rahana stepped into the arms of a loving God. The cruel Iranian regime can no longer touch or hurt her. She is finally free. That was the dedication I wrote in the beginning of my book, The Cross in the Desert, Speaking Hope and Freedom to Iran. I remember Sholi sharing with us, that is my friend Payman A and I, painful details of saying goodbye to her daughter. How do you do that? How on earth do you visit your daughter for the very last time, knowing that she will be executed? And Sholi mentioned that she asked Rahana to sit on her lap. And she said, "I've requested that you do this for a long time." Before, they had to meet between the plain glass window. They couldn't actually touch Rahana. And on this occasion, they were able to meet in this office setting. And Rahana sat on Sholi's lap for a long time. And Sholi just kissed her daughter and held her daughter. It's just a beautiful, touching moment. And it's hard to imagine, what if you and I had to go through that pain? And yet, as Shadi mentioned, Sholi is a courageous lioness, and she is tough, and she is not afraid of anything or anyone. And so in my book to Rahana, I'm going to say something very special for Sholi, and just for the kind of person she is, unafraid and courageous. And she lives in one of the most dangerous countries in the world. So please pray for Sholi and her family, that have to endure this every day, because coming up very soon will be a year anniversary of this execution. And I think all of us, human rights activists and many, are going to plan something very special for that day in tribute to Rahana and tribute to Sholi and her whole family for what they've endured. Well, I want to thank you so much for spending time with me today on the Cross in the Desert, Patricia, Mary, Lori, and all of you that are in the chat room. You had an exceptional treat today listening to Shadi's testimony of what she does. She's an amazing friend, a real wonderful friend, and so dedicated at what she does. And so I thank you so much for sacrificing your time to meet with me today on the Cross in the Desert. As always on my page, you can visit the page. You'll see petitions. You'll see stories about those that are suffering in Iran and all over the world today. Today we heard about the Stop Iran rally. We have to do something about this deal. We cannot let this deal pass. We heard the story of Yeonmi Park, a North Korean defector, and her amazing story of finding hope and freedom by living here. And we heard about Kim Davis, made an example of by the liberal media, but she's a true champion of the Christian faith. She said to her convictions, "I'm going to obey God rather than man," and I think the Lord has rewarded her suffering. Thank you, everyone, for spending time with me today on the Cross in the Desert. I will see you very soon again on Monday for another edition of the Cross in the Desert. You have yourself an incredible weekend. God bless you. See you very soon again.